When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The following is a production of DallasCowboys.com and the Dallas Cowboys Football Club.
How about this, Cowboys?
Yes! Go Cowboys!
This is the DallasCowboys.com Draft Show. Your war room for insider news and draft analysis from deep within the confines of Cowboys headquarters at the Star in Frisco.
All right, welcome on into Draft 101, brought to you by Miller Lite. We are one, 1 week away from right now. Round one of the NFL Draft will be open. Of course, Cowboys have the 24th overall selection. I'm Zach Wolchuk of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan, also of the Draft Show. We've got the great Super Bowl winning scout, Brian Broaddus, the Draft Show legend. Of course, my partner on 105.3 The Fan with the G-Bag Nation, Nick Harris, DallasCowboys.com, his first year with us and is doing a bang-up job. Let's give a round of applause for Nick, please.
Yeah.
Bobby Bell, our Cowboys insider, Sean and RJ as well, 105.3 The Fan. And, of course, Kyle Yeomans, another new dad like myself over here at DallasCowboys.com. Kyle, longtime North Texas Mean Green buddy of mine as well.
No doubt about it. And hey, let's give it up for Zach Wolchuk here, too. He's not going to get a round of applause, so wanted to make sure that he's good, too.
Well, this is pretty awesome that we're sitting in here in the Cowboys meeting room. I think this is the first time in Draft 101 history that has happened. And thank you so much to all that are in attendance. You guys sold this thing out. I think it was, within 3 hours that we had tickets go up and available? Pretty incredible. And thank you all to your draft passion, for you watching us on the Draft Show, all the interaction we get on social media and on the Fan. We love doing what we do, but I think it's time we talk some drafts. We'll be taking questions from you throughout the entire time that we're here. So if you have any questions, we can figure out a way to get you a mic, and we'll set you up right over there. You can come over, ask us a question, and we're happy to talk some draft with you. But team, I mean, as we're a week out, pick 24, if we got to kick it around the horn, what's the dream pick right now today? I think you guys know who mine is.
Who is it?
Graham Barton.
That's mine.
Graham Barton. Is it yours?
Oh, yeah. That's my dream.
Let's go.
Too.
Let's go.
Get after it.
To the Graham Barton fan club right here. Yeah, I love Graham Barton. I mean, it is a projection, and we've talked about him a lot. Played left tackle most recently. Go back to his freshman year. You can watch him play some center. But I think it's the attitude in which Graham Barton plays with, the nastiness. He wants to finish you every single snap. I think if you haven't seen him, the tape, the one-on-ones against Jared Verse from Florida State stood out to me. It's exactly the reasons I don't want him necessarily as a starter at left tackle, because you see some of the limitations against an athletic, disruptive edge like Verse. But you also see a time where Verse will stunt inside, and you get a little taste of what it'll be like for Graham Barton in a phone booth there, and he just puts Jared Verse on his ass. I'm like, that's my dude right there.
He's done that a couple of times. He's so smart with the way that he plays the game. That's the thing, is he's got a high intelligence in the way that he attacks defenders, and he does so against guys like Verse, and he does so against anybody else. But it's the versatility for me with the way that Tyler Smith is handled right now, left tackle, the left guard, to left tackle, the left guard. You don't necessarily know exactly what you're doing. I think Graham Barton gives you a for sure answer. You've got your left tackle of the future. His name's Tyler Smith, and he's already in the building.
There you go.
We've talked a lot about Graham Barton being able to come in and play center immediately.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, let's say he gets picked.
Sure.
What is the potential? He comes in. Hey, that's a really good left guard you got right there. TJ Bass and Brock Hoffman, those are options you could still throw in at center. Left guard Graham Barton, I mean, with the traits that he has and being able to play up against interior guys, you say that he can handle more of those athletic guys. Mm-hmm. So let's put him up against three techs, maybe even a five tech that's trying to come inside. I think there's also an option for Graham Barton to play left guard. I think for me, that's probably why he would be my dream pick.
The versatility.
We're all on the wagon.
100%. Yeah, the versatility, the
it's
piano
just a big
player.
Train over here.
Yeah, Graham Barton. Barton guys on the bus with us?
Barton?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
We good Rand Barton at 24. I do want to welcome in Aisha Morrison, of course, DallasCowboys.com.
Hello.
Thank you as well to those of us streaming on Twitch and on YouTube on the 105.3 The Fan's YouTube and Twitch sites. We appreciate you. We love you. Aisha, 24. Graham Barton, or do you have somebody else that's your dream pick?
No, I'm okay with it. I think that somebody made a good point earlier today on the show that even if he does come in, if you were to bring in Graham Barton, is that going to take away from how good he is with communication as a center? And I think that you made that point earlier, Nick, so that would be the only thing, but we know what he's capable of. And then when you look at the Cowboys, so many of the offensive lines that they're playing, and a lot of the defensive lines that they're playing are strong on the interior. So to get a guy in there that's not afraid to wrestle would be nice to pair, you know, right there next to the whatever center they decide to bring in. So
okay, Bobby, I want to get your thoughts here in just a second, but Brian, this is way too comfortable. We're all agreeing.
It's weird.
Why should Graham Barton not be the pick at 24?
Because Jackson Powers Johnson should be the pick for Oregon.
He always got to make a scene, man.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing, and I have nothing against Graham Barton at all. And I think the thing that when you look at the Dallas Cowboys, especially with some of the issues that they dealt with in the running game, I think point of attack blocking at tight end was poor. I don't think Luke Schoonmaker did enough for you there. I don't think the tight ends as a whole did enough. And your center was not good enough at reaching wide techniques or getting second level blocks. Graham Barton can do those kinds of things, but I think when you start to talk about power and what you're playing with within this division, in the NFC East, we're starting to see these larger, bigger, more athletic tackles. And so I think you have to be able to combat that. And, you know, Graham Barton, I think, can wrestle with anybody like we're talking about. I think that just that Powers Johnson has just a little bit more power to him. He's a 328-pound guy, but you watch him. You watch him reach wide techniques. You watch him play second level. You watch him pull. You watch him, like, get two blocks on one play. He'll take a down guy, bounce that guy, and then bounce to another guy. I like the kid from Duke, but to me, if you want to give me the most powerful player at that position, I'm taking Powers Johnson from Oregon.
Okay, Bobby.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's funny. The four names I think you see most consistently around the Cowboys just through mock drafts and everything else right now are Jackson Powers Johnson, Graham Barton, the two guys we talk about here, and then Amarius Mims and Tyler Guyton. Amarius Mims, the tackle at Georgia, Guyton, the tackle at Oklahoma. And this is the function of picking at 24, is that you're talking about there's a projection, there's a question, there's something about all of them, no matter how much you like them. If you like Mims, you like Guyton, you're talking about projecting somebody to left tackle that's been primarily a right tackle. If you like Jackson Powers Johnson, you're going to have to probably get comfortable with some things about his health. If you're talking about Graham Barton, you're talking about kicking him inside to a completely different position than he's played since, you know, his freshman year. And so I lean towards, when I say, what are the Cowboys doing right now? Where are they at? Are, you know, there are teams that are rebuilding, there are other teams in the middle of contention, there are other teams trying to, you know, get in while the window is still open. And I think that the Cowboys being in sort of a win now mode right now, it's just, what center are you most comfortable with? Because I think center minimizes the most risk of all of the picks that they're potentially looking at the offensive line, because you do have Tyler Smith who can play tackle, you do have TJ Bass who can play guard. If you commit to Tyler Smith at left guard, you know, are you talking about potentially a center and a left tackle that you got to go find? How comfortable are you with Brock Hoffman? I think that TJ Bass is probably more ready to go right now than I would say Hoffman.
Sure. Well, we've also gotten to see him a little bit more.
Yeah. And so because of that, just where that function is, then I think you got to say, okay, the win now move right now that is for the betterment of your team would be, to me, whichever center you have graded higher right now, I would probably lean Graham Barton.
Does anybody, are you scared about, and maybe the apprehension I would have about Mims? I think Mims is a hell of a player, and I always get these guys laugh at me because I'm the old guy. When we start to talk about ceilings and floors and all that, I never talked about that in a war room, but they talk about it today. But I was just wondering, with Mims and the lack of games that he's played, you know, you could watch the Ohio State playoff game and you get an idea of, like, okay, this guy can block NFL-type players. Mm-hmm. But is there any apprehension about him playing a different position, though, but with the minimal number of games that he's played?
You ever been to a wedding? You know, you got the low floor.
I've been in a couple of them myself.
You see these ceilings that are all
might
the way high.
Be a sore subject, Nick.
Yeah, I lost my first one because of the NFL.
Okay. Just waiting.
Has he ever been in a wedding, Nick?
You walk into the venue, you see these high ceilings with the chandelier, and you look.
You've tried to do this with me before.
I would love to touch that chandelier, but yeah. I'm gonna have to get there.
That's Amarius Mims.
That's Amarius Mims. That chandelier all the way up there. But also, you are looking at your feet, and you realize how tall that chandelier is.
I've been laying on the ground before at weddings. Yeah. I understand that too. Yeah.
You got to understand how far you got to get there. And I think that is what Amarius Mims is. Yes, he has this crazy high ceiling, but also at the same time, you don't really know completely the product that you're getting. Right. For me, whenever I'm looking at guys that you don't have a lot of experience with, and in Amarius Mims' case, only 8 starts at Georgia. Yes, his first start came in a game against Ohio State in the playoff semifinals back in 2023. And I really loved what he did in that game. I think that was his best product that he put forth. What I like to see whenever I'm looking at guys that don't have a lot of experience is, okay, what did they show that I know that they can improve on at the next level? What have they shown in that 8 games that they've been able to develop? Because you can at least get a trajectory from that line, right? You look at game 1, you look at game 8. Okay, I didn't like what he did here as far as his hand fighting was against Ohio State in certain areas. Okay, here in game 8, I see that kind of improving. Yes, there is still ways for him to go, but I know that trajectory is actually going. So with Amarius Mims, I love the frame. I love the size. I think with a guy like that, you bring him in the building, you start to ask, okay, what do you know from an intelligence standpoint? What do you know from a blocking scheme standpoint? Can you get to the second level? What does your mobility look like? And I think you kind of round that all up in your report. But I think that's when the in-house stuff becomes so important, because you want to know the type of person you're getting to if it means that you have to really develop that guy.
This is where if I was in the war room with Jerry Jones, being an older guy, I would try and sell Flozell Adams here. Because the thing I always learned about working with Jerry, you have to tell him, this player reminds me of this guy. And you could paint that picture for him. If you could do that, then he'll have a better understanding of what he's potentially dealing with. So if I was one of the older scouts like Chris Hall, guys that have been with him, I would say, hey, potentially this is your Flozell Adams at 6'8", 340 pounds. He has a history and understanding of what Flozell Adams was like as a tackle for him in the 90s.
How do you feel about Amarius Mims, Aisha?
I mean, I kind of agree with Brian on this. And I think it goes back to what Bobby said about this being a year where you're looking for this team to take a step forward, and you're relying on the idea that this gentleman's going to come in and be that starter that you're looking for. With some of the development stuff and some of the timing in which he's had experience or the lack of experience, that would give me pause, just because you really ain't got time for your quarterback to be getting hit this year, especially with the loss of Tyron. So for me, I'm on the fence about it, but I do see the potential there. It's just like, baby, I don't know if we got time for potential right now.
Well, and not to completely like turn the conversation back to Graham Barton again, but that's part.
No, please turn it back.
I know you would love for that.
Zach?
But the whole point about this tackle class is that there's a lot of question marks outside of those first couple names. Joe Alt, Notre Dame, check. Olu Fashanu, Penn State, check. Taliese Fuaga from Oregon State.
Yeah, you and the Fashanu thing. You got to stop.
I know.
Dude.
Yeah,
I'm people who didn't like Patrick Surtain coming out. Oh, his tape's boring.
You're that kind of guy.
We'll circle back in a year. We'll circle back in a year. Go on your cover.
But I'm just saying, whenever you're talking about these top tackle prospects, outside of those top 3 or 4 names, you've got question marks around almost every other tackle prospect.
Okay.
They're either moving positions. I know there's a move of a position for Graham Barton, maybe not so much for Jackson Powers Johnson as well, but it's a translatable thing to the NFL that's different than sticking a guy at left tackle in, like Aisha's pointing out. You got to play immediately, and you got to be good immediately to protect that quarterback.
So we do. We got a lot of guys that we've seen most recently play on the right side, and you might be projecting them over to the left. Bobby, out of the most realistic options, and I guess we learned with CeeDee Lamb falling to 17, maybe everything's a realistic option. You don't know what's going to happen in the draft, but who do you think are the short list of tackles that you would think the Cowboys would go for there at 24?
And you mentioning the Lamb scenario there. So we're just talking about who we think can, like, outside of a Lamb scenario.
Yeah, outside of a Lamb scenario, and then maybe the one guy, because I certainly have one that if we did get a dream Lamb scenario, that I think would be a home run selection.
I think tackles, it's names we've kicked around a lot recently on the draft show. Mims, Guyton, those two stand out right there. And then to me, I think the other one that we should be talking more about, and I think that there's a building awareness of him among Cowboys fans within the draft community, is Kingsley Suamataia from BYU.
Okay, I'm glad that you brought him up. Was it visit yesterday here, posted about it at the Star. I think he's better than the other two guys, Guyton and Mims. Would you agree or disagree?
Like NFL ready, better just, right this
he's,
second?
He's higher on my stack than both of those guys, yeah.
I could see it with Guyton. I don't know if I'm there with Mims.
Mims has more, again, I should say, ceiling. Potential, right? Upside, ceiling. Brian.
Chandelier.
Is that chandelier right up there?
But there's so many question marks. I think I know what I'm getting in Kingsley Suamataia. 391 pass snaps, didn't allow a single sack last year. You have seen him at both, and I think at first I was a little critical. Does he open up his chest? Is he letting linemen get inside of him there when it comes to the footwork, the athleticism? Could he translate? Went back, watched him a little bit more because he is a name that I think is starting to, hey, we need to know him here, Bobby. I think the guy can do it, and I think he's steady, and you know what he's getting. There's less of a projection to your point.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you kind of referenced it there for all of the projection that we're talking about. And look, Kingsley Suamataia still is a raw football player in a lot of ways. But I think that, like you mentioned, we have seen a full season of right tackle snaps. We've seen most recently a full season of left tackle snaps. You know that he adjusted well to those sort of things. And this is, look, this is where this Cowboys scouting staff is so critical, and they do such a good job. There was so much hand-wringing and disappointment and freaking out the night they picked Tyler Smith for a lot of people. And this was a staff that said, look, we've done the investigative work to understand who this player is and why he has the ability to progress forward and reach this. Despite all these flaws that you may see, we're comfortable with them doing this. So to me, I think that Kingsley Suamataia is some of those same sort of issues that you see. Like it's a similar question with Tyler Smith, where if they're comfortable with what kind of a worker he is, how he takes to coaching, things like that, I think he'd be a great pick because I think the upside really is fantastic.
Well, and a shout out to the Cowboy scouts. I mean, if they draft a lineman in the first round, they know what they're doing. So I'm not, I mean, even if they were to take a Guyton out of Oklahoma, who I'm not in love with, and I think certainly has, if I had to bet on like which one of those guys I don't think translates the best, I think Guyton's got a little bit more work to be done. But you see some traits there that you really like that I could see an offensive line coach say, okay, bring him in. I can mold him and make him something good. What was the offensive tackle that would slide to you that would get you most excited, Bobby?
I mean, the guy that I would love to fall down to them, the guy that would be my dream, and I don't see him getting down there, is just Troy Fatanu from Washington. Yeah. That's a guy to me that I think no matter where you want to play him, however you want to, you know, use Tyler Smith, I think Troy Fatanu can step in and be a above average NFL tackle or guard right away. And I think he's somebody who can be a Pro Bowl guard or tackle in very short order. And so whichever direction you want to play him, if you can get him to slide down the board a little bit to you, if you get some of these teams that like Fuaga more and Fashanu and guys like that, then and you can push him down, it's not as unrealistic to me heading into draft day as it felt like CeeDee Lamb was, and that happened.
Brian, more realistic guy to slide, is it Fuaga from Oregon State, or is it Fatanu, you think, from Washington?
Fatanu, I think. Fuaga, they've done a lot of legwork on, too. To me, he's been one of those guys that I've kind of viewed as a possible trade up. You know, there was all the early mock drafts had him basically with the Jets at 10. Before, you know, they made the deal for Tyron Smith. I don't think that's going to keep the Jets from doing anything like that. But to me, Fuaga is the one. I mean, I got him second as second offensive tackle on my board. Alt would be number one. But, you know, I think it's really, really interesting when you start to talk about Fatanu and what he could do. And, like, to me, there's a lot of just wow blocks with him.
There are.
You know, when you watch him, the power, the upper body strength. He had a little trouble in the USC game, and you always kind of look for the good competition where guys, you know, they got a little bit better edge rushers and stuff like that. It was a little bit of a battle for him. The waist bending stuff was getting a little bit of a problem for him. But for a man that size, when you talk about 6'4", 317 pounds, the athletic ability he has, man, if he could somehow get to you, boy, that would be a big get for the Cowboys.
All right, let's do a little top three because you guys know I love my top 10 list. So I want to go ahead and name my top three-round selections. If the Cowboys came away with this, I'm having a party on draft night. You guys can give me yours. If you like anything that I've done here, go ahead and share that with me, and then we can go ahead maybe take some questions for those of you that want to ask us anything here on Draft 101. Appreciate you being here. I think you guys know, obviously, Graham Barton, Duke, center, 24, I'd be thrilled with. I am willing to take the risk at 56. Now, I don't have the medical report, right? Mm-hmm. I think Peyton Wilson's the best linebacker in this draft. And
instead of this in the Wolfpack, or instead of that in the Texas Longhorns, I thought you were going Jonathan Brooks.
No,
for
I'm
a
not.
Second.
I'm not going Jonathan Brooks. And the reason is I think that there's a running back in the third round that I could get that I like quite a bit as well. And I think
is it this one?
It's not that one, because I think he's going to be off the board. But that's my RB1 is Trey Benson. But I think Peyton Wilson, I think linebacker is more likely maybe a spot you've got to address in the second round, because I think running back stretches a little bit more to me in the third. Now I could see the Cowboys 100% going ahead and taking Jonathan Brooks out of Texas. Be a good pick. He's my running back, too. I wouldn't be upset with it. But you need a linebacker. Peyton Wilson, the tape, when you turn it on, he's far and away the best in the draft. I don't think there's any question mark when it comes to rushing the passer, tackling in space, coverage ability. The questions are all the medical history. And in the second round, I mean, we are in a building where they've taken some guys of medical history, because the talent's just too darn good to pass up. This guy, though, has played 2 years of clean football. And I'm hoping that maybe that's behind him. I just love him. I'd go ahead and say talent's too good to pass up. Edgerrin Cooper would be my other name out of A&M, the linebacker there. I'd take them both ahead of Junior Colson out of Michigan. But at three, it's Jalen Wright, running back out of Tennessee. I love Jalen Wright, the explosiveness. I think he can be a three-down back. To me, he's fantastic. And I think he's probably one of the more underrated running backs in the draft. If you listen to the draft show, Bucky Irving, I know, is Knicks guy. Yeah. You know, I love Jalen Wright. Brian, I know you're a fan as well.
Yeah, I am too. You know, if I had to look at my perfect draft, I think Powers Johnson, the center from Oregon, would be the guy that would take. I really do like Wilson a lot. I'm old enough to have scouted Luke Kuechly when he came out of Boston College. I think this kid has those kinds of traits. His ability to play downhill, the ability to cover, the ability to play sideline to sideline. The only thing holding him back is this injury history, you know, and again, that's something, but I would absolutely love the opportunity to have him. I like what you did with the running back, though, in the third round. Me personally, I like Lloyd, the running back from USC, a little bit better than Wright, Allen, Irving. I think that there's going to be some value there with those guys. So to me, if you give me that killer at the center, a linebacker that will make every single tackle, and then a running back with some elusiveness, ability to catch the football, make people miss, kind of help your offensive line.
Jalen
I think
Wright.
You're doing yourself some good work there.
We're going dream scenario here.
Dreams. Give me dreams. Sell me on dreams.
My first round pick would be Troy Fatanu then.
You get a CeeDee Lamb situation, and here we go at 24.
Yeah, it's unlikely, but that would be the dream scenario. Second round, I'm still going Jonathan Brooks. Okay. I love what he did in his one season with
Texas
the Longhorns
homer,
as a starter.
I expected it.
I love what he did with his one season as a starter with the Longhorns. I mean, you talk about contact balance. You talk about being able to fight through guys. He still is elusive out of the backfield as well as a receiving option. They understand the medical reports in this building with the Cowboys team doctor performing the surgery on that ACL. And like you said, like there is no hesitance in this building when it comes to injury guys.
No.
So second round, Jonathan Brooks. And then third round, you would have to address that defensive tackle or linebacker position. For me, I'm going defensive tackle, and I would like to go McKinley Jackson there in the third round out of Texas A&M. Ooh. Just a wide body that you can put at one tech and be able to fill those running lanes. Look, Mozzie Smith coming back next year, I don't think anyone really understands what's going to happen there. He lost a lot of weight towards the back end of the season last year. He's dealing with a shoulder injury going into the year, and as of right now, that's your only one tech. I feel like that has to be addressed in the first 2 days. Go ahead and get McKinley Jackson there in the third and hope that he can come in and at least provide a wide body if Mozzie is not able to come onto the field, or if he's not what they expected when
Did you go Jackson in the third because you know that the one technique defensive tackles is not deep at all?
Yeah, it's not deep at all. And I feel like I can get a linebacker there on day three where you can still have some really good value. We talk about guys like Jordan McGee out of Temple. That's an option that you could possibly throw out at linebacker. I'm trying to think of guys right off the top of my head. Edifon Olafosio out of Washington. I think he's another guy that you could get there on day three. So I think there's a little bit
Wallace
more depth
out of
there.
Kentucky.
Yeah, I think he goes in the third, and I think that's probably the discussion you have. Do you want to go ahead and jump on Trevor Wallace?
I love him.
I'm a big fan. Yeah. I mean, if you don't take a linebacker in the second – Yeah. I'm Ian Wallace in the third.
Yeah, he brings a lot to the table. And you have to also understand, if you're picking there at 87 and there's no trades involved, you're not picking again until 174, late in the fifth round. So y'all can sleep in on day three. There's not going to be a whole lot going on until that pick 174 if there's not a trade made. So I want to make sure and I get a position where I know there's a bigger need. And for me, that's defensive tackle over linebacker.
Okay, if there's no trades, though, to me, where I think Jackson from Texas A&M fits for you is if you do backup. If you get that extra,
yeah, because
you get that
high
pick, and I know if you watch the draft show that we did this morning, we went, we traded back, and then we traded back up. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go back and kind of get an idea how the landscape might be for that, we did that this morning. But yeah, to me, I think that Jackson is if you pick up that extra pick, you know. But man, he is a really good player for Texas A&M, 326-pound guy that plays on the other side of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, to me, I mean, it's funny because you're talking about him as a one tech, and that's a guy typically you think like what you drafted Mozzie, right?
That's what's kicking me in the butt right now.
But what excites me the most about McKinley Jackson is actually his disruptiveness up the field.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he's got some pass rush ability for a one tech.
Right.
What about you, Bobby?
Yeah, I think Fatanu is the dream at 24 for me. I don't know how attainable it is, but look, I think that when you look at what was most wrong with this football team at the end of the year, like I think we would say that it was the running game on both sides of the ball. It was stopping the run. It was being able to generate the running game. And then, you know, you've got some peripheral traits that you would maybe talk about, like you want the glass eaters, you want the toughness, you want the guys with the edge on them. And so to me, I think Fatanu fits that on the offensive line. It's going to be tough figuring out center, but I mean, at that point, the value would just be too high for me. So Fatanu there. And then in the second round, it's Edgerrin Cooper, because I do think that that's somebody who has a chance to be really special. And look, I know you've
good
got
pass Edgerrin rusher too.
Oh, yeah.
10 sacks.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And that's somebody who, like a lot of times we see, you know, these hair on fire type of linebackers that have come out in recent years.
Peyton Wilson.
But we start watching them at times and
Peyton Wilson.
It shows up in there a lot, Brian, in your reports too. A lot of times we end up describing these guys like, well, they're guessers. So like when they guess
not
right,
a guesser.
When they guess right, they hit it and it's impressive. And when they guess wrong, it's ugly. And I think that with Cooper, to me, I see a lot of natural instincts that the longer that he's in place, it doesn't mean that he's always in his run fits the right way. He misses, he over pursues at times, but I think the instincts overall are really good. And you know, with Eric Kendricks being here for probably just a year, mm-hmm. I think that Overshown and Cooper as a duo would be great. And then in the third round, you're looking at a running back. I mean, I could say dream and say pray everybody is scared away by Jonathan Brooks's knee, but I'm not going to cheat. So I'll say Audric Estime from Notre Dame.
I like Audric Estime. That's another name that we haven't talked about a ton, and he's a good player.
And that's for those of you that aren't familiar with Audric Estime from Notre Dame, this is not going to be a Tony Pollard replacement.
No, that's just a downhill between the tackles. I'm going to run you over.
But I mean, that's something that they could use. They could use physicality. They could use toughness. They could use that edge in the running game. And so to me, you remember a couple years ago in the Tyler Smith draft, that seemed to be a big focus for them. They're like, let's identify toughness as a trait and include that in our prioritization. And I think that they're kind of back to that spot again. I think if you get those three, you're getting three really tough players who really help set the tone in the run game on both sides.
You could look at these first three picks, and there's a lot of names that have been circling that have those medical red flags. I know Peyton Wilson, mm-hmm. we've talked about extensively. Jackson Powers Johnson has some medical concerns. Jonathan Brooks. In my dream, there's no hurt guys. None of that. No, I don't want any medical red flags in my first three picks. So I'm going to go with Graham Barton early. Okay. I think Graham Barton is
he's rehabbing the right shoulder.
He'll
be fine.
He'll be born labor by training camp. It's been passed. We're fine.
All right.
Everything's
sure
good. Everything's good. But yes, I'm going to have Graham Barton as that first pick overall. The dream continues with Edgerrin Cooper, and for the same thing there, I'm dreaming of a world where DeMarvian Overshown and Edgerrin Cooper are on the field together and interchangeable back and forth. Tons of length, tons of athleticism, pass rush ability, and really that sideline to sideline that you've been missing, and a physicality you've been missing at the second level, and a guy that hasn't had the same injury history as a guy like a Peyton Wilson. As fun as Wilson's tape is to watch, I'm still worried overall about what he can bring.
Speed.
The third one, my dream is still alive, though. I think Trey Benson does fall a little bit further.
I'm with you. I really do. I mean, I've got Benson higher than Wright. I'd love it if he were there. I'd take Benson over Wright.
And here's the reason why. This is not one of those running back classes with Bijan Robinson. This isn't a running back class with Jahmyr Gibbs. This isn't that same level of class. We're talking about Jonathan Brooks, who barely has an ACL, that's up front early. And you're still trying to talk about him being the pick at 56.
I should thought
that. What was that?
You thought I had ride it too?
No, Benson all the way down to the... Oh, I was afraid.
Benson's my one. Brooks is my two.
But you think he's going to fall all the way down to...
No, I don't. Okay, but well... In Kyle's dream...
I guess it's a dream scenario.
I think it's possible. The running back position isn't valued as much as it used to be.
I think there's an opportunity for these guys to fall.
I don't know that he falls all the way down to them in the third round. I would be very surprised at this point if Trey Benson went in the first two.
Okay.
Yeah.
But with that being said, if I don't, I can be optimistic about this.
I mean, I like Trey Benson. I have him in the second, but I do. I would be surprised if he went in the first two rounds.
You've got Braylon Allen sitting there too, and you talk about a physical runner and a guy that could be that back and forth, and that downhill between the tackles. I like Allen out of Wisconsin as my backup scenario if Benson isn't there, and I still need to take a running back in the third.
Okay, I would probably just go with Ray Davis out of Kentucky.
What do you got? We ain't talked them down.
What do you got, Aisha?
So are we agreeing that if Talese Fuaga fail to you, you're just going to move him to the other side?
To the left?
Yes.
Yeah, to the left side.
Okay, so we're dreaming.
We're dreaming.
As far as, I mean...
I've also heard there's some guard love there with Talese Fuaga. There's some guard love from scouts.
Don't stress me out.
Just say it. I just want to throw that out.
Just let me go with my
Make it a little bit more complex.
But
apparently we're playing Madden. That's what we're doing now.
Now, first round pick, I think Talese Fuaga, he just comes in and his temperament is just, he's a tone setter. And I think that's something that you're looking for on your offensive line. It wasn't that many times I saw bad snaps from him. I don't know about y'all. And just how quickly he can get to the second level. To the second level, like we talked about, is important to me as well. So I would go with him for my first round pick. For my second round pick, I decided, y'all, that if they're not going to address DT, then they just need to score a whole bunch of points. So for me, I would like Ricky Pearsall.
Look at you.
Oh, okay.
Look at you.
Wide receiver.
I was going to ask the question. Nobody picked a wide receiver. Nobody picked a wide receiver. Nobody even thought about a wide receiver.
I don't think I would go wide receiver in the first two rounds.
I'm so proud of you, right?
I'm only doing it because I just think that he could be a really good addition to this this offense. Do some things underneath. The route running is there from him. He's really smooth in and out of his breaks. But then also too, you look at Brandon Cooks. Yeah, he's here for another year, but you need to be trying to plan for the future a little bit. That wide receiver core after Brandon Cooks, I mean, there's still Jalen Tolbert, but we're still waiting for him to take a step up as well. So for my third round pick, Brian already said it. I think Marshawn Lloyd out of USC will be a fantastic addition to this backfield. Runs with some toughness. I like his vision and how he's able to slash and things like that. So at this point, if you're not going to touch DT early, then let's just score a whole bunch of points.
Offense.
Absolutely.
Is it the return of Team 40 Burger? Or is that what we're doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody do something.
The Draft Show fans out there know that. They got that.
Okay. And I'm heavy on DT. I think, I know Bobby feels very strongly about the fact that, hey, you did that last year. Well, but
why don't you want to take a DT, Bobby?
He doesn't want to take one early.
I understand that.
Look, you gave up a fourth round pick. You have not really done anything in free agency. You've signed two outside free agents. Right, Royce Freeman, the running back, and then you went and got Eric Kendricks. You've lost four defensive linemen, so I understand, you do need defensive line help, everything else. But when you're talking about what can you afford to do right now, what is not only within your budget, financially, but what's within your budget in terms of capital? To me, last year, they had a very passionate argument. We all saw the mic'd up segment, and we've heard the discussion about it. There was a very passionate argument about Matthew Bergeron, the offensive lineman, or Mozzie Smith, the defensive tackle. And they made their commitment 12 months ago. We are 12 months removed from them saying, this is a first-round player. This is somebody we're willing to take over a premium position in offensive line. This is what we're going to do. So with so many legitimate holes, until you figure out where Tyler Smith is playing, until you settle on that, you currently have three holes in terms of starting positions on your offensive line. You've got holes in the linebackers. You know, edge rushers got a lot of holes with depth. To me, one of the areas where you can't sacrifice right now is say, we've got to be able to trust that Oso Odighizuwa is going to continue to be a great three technique. And the guy we graded as a top 15 player or whatever it was a year ago, we need to bank on that evaluation, trust the evaluation, and we need to trust this new coaching staff that we brought in to bring that out of him. Because that at least you have something to bank on. Right now with offensive line and other positions on the field, it's like, well, you don't even have anything to hope for because there's not a player there right now. It's empty. And so that I understand if it was if you had six picks in the first three rounds, you had this wealth of draft capital, I'd be all for taking a defensive tackle as well. It's just with the limited resources, is that the most efficient use for a team that needs to win right now?
What about you bring up wide receiver, maybe sneaky need. I think I could make the same argument for corner. I mean, what do you have right now behind Diggs and Bland? And Lewis, sure, that you feel good about, but Eric Scott Jr., they did move up in draft. Now you got a different defensive coaching staff in there. I mean, you have, and you're banking on Diggs coming back from an injury, and we've seen sometimes that doesn't always go as you had hoped. There's some good corners that you could take from rounds 2 through 4. Maybe it's a TJ Tampa at Iowa State. Maybe it's Kyrie Jackson out of Oregon. You know, maybe there's a slot guy that you like, Jerrion Jones out of Florida State. You could take early day 3. I mean, would corner come into your mind at all here, Brian?
It's such a deep position right now. It's kind of like the wide receiver thing. You know, you mentioned Jackson, and I know that my colleague here, our young man out of Oregon, we kind of thought about him.
He's an alpha.
We kind of thought about him as maybe a third-round guy. Now he's at the bottom of the first.
Yeah.
You know, there's you know, a guy with length, sticky ability. That's what Mike Zimmer. Mike and I go way, way back. I've worked with Mike. I know what Mike wants in a corner. He wants a guy that's got some length to him. He wants guys that are 5'11 or better. He wants guys that are sticky, kind of man cover type ability to that. You know, interchangeable safeties. There's a lot of things that Mike really, really desires. But that corner back, the position of it is so deep, but there's so many different body types there.
Yeah.
So to me, again, I like what Aisha did with the wide receiver because it's a little bit different. It's a little bit outside the box. And I love Ricky Pearsall, by the way. That's great. One of my favorite players. But to me, though, I think I could wait a little bit on the corner, you know, if I had to. Because when I'm stacking my board, I'm down. I've got 215 players. I'm at player 142. I can't tell you how hard it's been for me to kind of put these corners in spots because you want to give them their due. You know, you want to say, okay, this guy's got this ability, this guy, and then you kind of clump them together, and you're like, man, does that seem right? And you're going, yeah, that's – so I kind of feel like, though, that in this draft, they're going to look at some other positions. Maybe the receivers are the same way, but the cornerback is something I feel like that they could look at through the whole draft and probably grab somebody they're really, really happy with that might be the next Deron Bland.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious – when you look at the fact that they don't have a fourth-round pick right now, let's say they stand in pick in the first three rounds, and so they don't pick again until the fifth round. Receiver, corner, that's where everybody feels most comfortable that you've got
– you could stretch groups, that maybe that edge. Edge.
So in the fifth round, you say edge, receiver, corner, that's a position you think you might be able to still have a fourth-round graded player there when you pick in the fifth?
Yeah.
Receiver and corner.
Receiver, I think you
at corner, yeah.
Yeah.
Receiver, corner, edge might be one of those guys that one of those positions where you say, okay, if you had a fourth round pick and you're sleeping on your board going into day 3, you might even have a third round grade on some of those guys. But when you get into that fifth round pick, was it 171, there might be a fourth round player still on your board.
All right. Do we have questions here for Draft 101? We'll open it up to questions. We got the mic right over here if you want to go step up. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us your name, where you're from, and we're here to answer whatever you got.
Hello. My name's Aaron Thacker. I'm from Sherman, Texas. And my question would be, if you have like later round picks like your 5th and 6th, would you possibly, and again, I don't know enough about like the compensation thing, so that's why I'm asking this, would you be able to use that to trade up to get that 4th round pick that you're missing so that way you could do that? Or would you have to like give up next year's capital as well to do that? That's my question. Thank y'all.
Ooh, do you know like trade chart wise or,
yeah,
Kyle, do you have that up?
Yeah, I've got the trade chart right here. So pick 174 is worth 22 points ultimately to try and move up. And you've got a couple picks after 174, but that's the highest value pick outside of the top 100. The most you can move up from pick 174 and it still be able, even if you package the rest of your draft, the earliest you would even get close to is about pick 120. That's about all you've got. So it would most likely, to your point, if you're going to move up at some point and try and finagle that fourth round pick back into your possession, you're going to do it using next year's draft capital, either a third or a fourth, to try and package maybe with 174, one of those other later picks, in order to move up and try and get back in that fourth round.
And I think there's an interesting point to make there as far as next year's draft capital is concerned, just because the one benefit to losing a million free agents is that you might get a million comp picks. So you might be able to package a couple of those next year with the expectation
Absolutely.
Of that. So
day three is going to be a blast next year.
Oh, man, day it's three, we're going to have like 10 picks. It's going to be great.
when you look at the trading up and trading backs, the picks from, like, if you go back to Tampa at 26, you would pick up their 125, which is a fourth-round pick. So that's a two-spot move for a four. If you did a trade with Arizona at 27, so I'm just going down what we did this morning, you pick up pick 138 and pick 162 from Arizona. Those are two fives. What we did this morning is we took those two fives and we tried to go up, back up into the draft, and had some options there. After the Arizona trade, when we pick up the two fives, we took pick 138, 162, 174, which was our own, all fifth round picks, and we tried to take that thing all the way to the Chargers at 105. The Chargers got two picks in the fourth. So what you could do is you could take if you made a deal with Arizona, you could move those two fifth round picks with your own fifth round pick and move that thing all the way up to try and get into the 105, 110 range. So that's how you would get your four if you wanted to do that, but it's going to cost you the two picks you got, the two fifth round picks, push your own fifth round pick.
Yeah, I think that's when you're talking about trying to get into the fourth round. If you want to go get into the fourth round, I don't know how much you
teams aren't going to let you in there all the time.
Yeah, and I don't know how much you want to sacrifice to move up. Like, I think it is going to have to be an instance where you move back, because I mean, we're sitting here lamenting the loss of a fourth round pick, and that could be of real value to them, and talking about giving up extra capital. I understand it's later day three, but you're talking about giving up extra capital or future capital, and at that point you're kind of chasing your tail trying to catch those picks back a little bit. And so to me, I think that if you're going to get up into the fourth round, it's got to be you're moving back somehow in the first or second and finding somebody who will give you that extra pick.
I'm the curious. Team you want to trade with is Kansas City.
Kansas City and Buffalo are the two that I think are the most likely, because they need a wide receiver. Yeah. Both teams need to go up and get a guy.
And it's funny, because if you look at and the way we, in the NFL, what we do is each selection has a value of points. And when you start to trade with the teams behind you, if you make trades with, say, Tampa Bay, there your total points would be 402. That's the highest you could get. By just moving back two spots and picking up that fourth, your point total goes to 402. Arizona's trade would be the next highest at 400. Buffalo's at 400. The Baltimore trade is at 397. San Francisco's trade is at 390. But Kansas City's at 401. So if you were willing to go from 24 to 32, you would get the best value for your trade is if you went all the way back to Kansas City and picked up there, because what they're offering you is they're offering you pick 95, which is a third round pick, and pick 133, which is a fourth. So now you're doing some good right there. That would give you pick 32, pick 56, pick 87, pick 95, pick 131, pick 174, pick 216, pick 233, pick 244.
Give us all the picks.
Now we're doing some damage here. You know, now we're making our team a little bit better. But do you have the stomach to go from 24 to 32? That's what they're going to have to determine in this room. You know, and you don't want to trade. We gave scenarios of guys that we would take at 24. And I think we're all committed to those guys.
Yeah. If they're not on the board, then I think you're more open to that.
That's what I'm saying. How committed are you when somebody like Kansas City calls you and offers you a third and a fourth to come down to their spot? You know, that tests your mettle in that room, whether you're willing to trade away from a guy you really like to pick up a couple extra picks.
Barton, Fatanu, Fuaga, all those guys are off the board. You're sitting there at 24. Mims is still on the board. Latham is still on the board. You getting on the phone and going to 32?
Yeah, I'd probably be open to moving back. Bobby, what did you think there?
No, I was just, and I mean, 32, if that's a drop, you're going to have trouble stomaching, Brian. You really don't want to drop to 36, I guess.
No, Nick was trying to talk me into day with what's that, Commanders?
It's an exact trade value chart match. If you go back to 36, you can get 78 from them, which they've got three picks in the third round.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an exact point okay. value matchup. If you want to get... Really?
Let me tell you what I did. Let me tell you what we did today on the show. We took the Kansas City trade, mm-hmm. 95 and 131, and we shoved that thing up to the Vegas Raiders.
Nick,
it got 77.
Us. Nick convinced us.
Yeah. So see, you could take the third round pick, that fourth round pick you get, and if you want to go to the Vegas Raiders at 77 and get back into this thing, or you want to take it to Washington at 78. So you could do some things. You could get creative. You could even take trades you made with Baltimore and San Francisco and go into the second round if you want.
Yeah. If that's the scenario, we can draft Ricky Pearsall. We can draft a wide receiver.
There you go.
If we can get some picks here and make it work. There. Yeah.
You can do not get the draft picks together back. Anytime you
can
want.
Can we sneak McKinley Jackson in there too?
Yeah,
in that
that's too much. You're asking too much here.
It's a lot. No. You enjoy the Thunder. All right, next draft question.
It's Chris from Wiley. I'm going to go in reverse direction here. Let's just say, you know, the Cowboys have been very quiet this offseason. Let's just say they decide they want to get a little aggressive. And let's say all six quarterbacks that, you know, everybody's talking about, let's say there's a run of quarterbacks in a first before the Cowboys draft. What player would you guys be – we all know the Cowboys need as many draft picks as they can, but what player would you guys be comfortable for them to move up?
Fuaga.
Fatana Fuagu. Fuaga. Valtano Fuaga.
Who? Yeah. Either one?
Rename it, people.
The Polynesian Fs.
Yeah, I think those would be the two names. Now, it depends on, I mean, you might need to move up and go get Barton if he's your guy.
Yeah.
With how this thing's looking, you got
that wouldn't cost you nearly as much. You'd have to get up into the late teens as opposed to maybe top 15, but
you never know. And Philadelphia has a contingency plan in place to play a center with Kelce retiring. But you also have seen a history of your division rival with Dallas Goedert, where Philadelphia will say, yeah, we like this guy, and we're going to take him just to stick it to the Cowboys.
Why would you?
If the Eagles took Barton at 22, I might throw up.
I'm
very worried about
hot.
The Steelers.
I would be
the Steelers,
the Steelers at 20 or another team, right? The Dolphins at 19.
I will say Graham Barton just sounds like a Pittsburgh Steelers name. Like, it's just, it does sound like that. So he would look good in the yellow and black. He'd look better in blue and silver.
Would.
But I agree with you. I think if you're going to go up and get a guy, it's going to cost you a lot to go get the Fuagas, to go get the Fatanus. And as much as that sounds fun, if they're sliding in the late teens, let's play around with the idea. But go get a guy if you feel like it. And if you're wanting to be aggressive, go get him if you have the capital to do so. I just don't necessarily think they have the capital to do so.
Bobby?
I'm averse to moving up. Period.
Well, and honestly, the Cowboys though seem to be too. They haven't moved up since Mo Claypool.
That's why to me, like, you're gonna have to get some. You're gonna have to get a Laremy Tunsil problem or something and push like Joe Alt down the board, like, before I'm gonna go up.
And who's got the gas?
I was about to say,
are you thinking of something?
Latham maybe.
Like J.C. Latham a lot.
The problem is that even these guys that I like, Latham and Alt and stuff, like, tackle, no. Like, likely will stretch quality down to you at 24. Is it enough that I want to go up and get it?
But that's the thing that the guys around the league are talking about right now is that all the offense, when you're sitting there at 24, and we, again, talked about this on the draft show today, you're sitting at 24 and all these offensive players are going off the board. Where's the offensive player for me at 24?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Dallas' best player on the board might be a defensive player at 24.
Or a receiver.
And not to say they would take him, but if you look at all these quarterbacks going, all these offensive tackles going, some of these wide receivers going, the best player on the board might be a defensive player for this team. Now, will they take him? I'm not saying they will. But, yeah, well, there you go. Trent back. But there you go. I've been in a draft room with these guys, and the phone hasn't rung. Trust me, I dropped on my knees one time praying that the phone would ring.
Please.
Yeah, please ring.
Is there video
ring.
Of this?
What's that?
Is there video of that?
I wish there was. But seriously, the room gets, like, deathly quiet. And like you're praying, and because you've laid the groundwork with all these guys. I mean, you've talked to all these teams and told them, "Hey, listen, we're open. Come on, come up to us. We'll trade with you. Come." But you know, you look what happened in the draft with Travis Frederick.
Mm-hmm.
They blew the hatch and bailed, went 18 picks down or 18 to 31. Yeah, and you know, sometimes you don't get the value on that. Should you've got a second round on that one? Second round, well, they took a third. Sometimes when you blow the hatches like that, you don't get the value of your pick.
How late would you be willing to go down? What's the last pick you'd be willing to ditch out of the first
38.
Round
for? 38 is where my floor is.
I was going to say Bobby's scenario with 36.
Is that the Commanders at 36?
It is the Commanders. Yeah, it's Dan Quinn.
Okay.
Yeah, and that would make me... that would make me nervous as well, but I think you could maybe cross your fingers and hope like Zach Frazier.
Do you feel like you guys could draft? Do you feel like you could get the BYU tackle at 36?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think so.
I think he'll be there.
I don't know. I think if there's a run on tackles like you're talking about, I don't think Kingsley Suamatia lasts until 36.
I think one of these three guys would be available: Suamatia, Jordan Morgan, Tyler Guyton.
Agreed.
One of those three would be available there.
It depends on what they think Jordan Morgan is. Does they think, is he a guard?
Yeah. And if so, then Tyler Smith playing tackle.
Right.
Guard.
Then Tyler plays tackle, and you feel good about Morgan at guard. You'll let Bass and Hoffman, or maybe you take a center later. Maybe it's Hunter Norris.
I don't know if they take Morgan.
There's no medical.
I don't know if we're talking enough about him, because if he is viewed as a guard, it's the same scenario as an interior offensive lineman like Barton and Jackson.
And the J.C. Latham conversation.
Same thing.
Latham's a right player.
I had a scout in the league, not a Cowboy scout, a scout in the league. I asked him about Latham. I said, "Do you think he could play left tackle?" And he says, "No, I don't. I think he's a right tackle, but I think he's an all-pro guard."
He's mean.
That's what, I mean, and that guy, this guy that scouts the Southwest area for a team, and he says, "I don't think he could play left tackle, but I bet she's an all-pro guard."
I do want to ask, what do you want to comment on that, Bobby?
No.
Okay. I do want to ask. You mentioned that we haven't mentioned Jordan Morgan that much. I feel like at the start of the draft, he was the star.
He was a hot
Everybody
guy,
was
yeah.
talking about him. What shifted? Was it the combine?
I think for a lot of people it was his length.
His length is
a little concerning to a lot of people. And that's probably where you start to slot him in at guard instead. But for me, durable. Tons of experience, 40-plus games.
Yes.
Didn't allow a lot of sacks, really good in pass pro, really good in run blocking. Does he do anything exceptional? Probably not, but I think he does everything pretty damn well. I think he's an all-around type player that can play guard at the next level and be good at doing it. Look, I am team Tyler Smith at left guard, but if they were to draft Jordan Morgan, I think he'd be great at left guard and Tyler Smith at left tackle.
Yeah, and I would say this. I think most of the time whenever there's a discussion of when we're trying to figure out, you know, what changed or other things like that, I think a lot of the times it's we catch up to where
teams are. Scouts, yeah.
I don't think teams have cooled on Jordan Morgan. I think teams have, if he goes to the second round, I think teams always viewed him as the second round, and there was probably discussion that was putting him more up in the first that teams were like, no, we don't necessarily agree with that. So I think very rarely is there like a strong push for a guy like that or a big change of opinion. I think a lot of times it's just we're catching up to where teams are at with
him. I watched him block Latu from UCLA, made him go to the other side.
His adjustments are
I've had enough of this guy killing me all day. I think I'm going to go to the other side.
He'll find a way to beat our guy standing on one foot. I mean, his balance is it's
Let me go toy with the freshman from Scottsdale.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to switch sides. All right, yes, sir, what do you have for us?
Hey, Alan from Joshua, Texas. I'm just saying I'm tired of our defense, the ball getting ran down their throat in the biggest games. I don't know if it's fixable in one draft, or if Zimmer's going to change things, but that's me, man. I know we need an offensive tackle, but the defense and the run game, you know, the run defense.
Let it out.
Yeah. Sorry.
We get it.
We're here for you.
I know Brian, you've made this assessment where I think we think a lot of the time stopping the run is, okay, I need to get big bodies in the middle.
Yeah.
And they do. They need to add size, and they thought they were doing so with Mozzie
Smith.
Playing
safeties at linebacker's tough.
Right. And I'm still hopeful that Mozzie ends up being a good player. I'm not – you can't give up on a guy based on 1 year. It's just – you took a guy in the first round for a reason, right? So it didn't go well. You hope year two he develops, and he's got a guy in Mike Zimmer who certainly has done a great job developing defensive tackles throughout his career. But do you think that more of the issue, and Brian, and then I want to get your thoughts, Bobby, and we can kick it around, is it that they are really that weak at defensive tackle? Is it more so the undersized linebackers, or is it the constant issue that they seem to always have as well with being able to set the edge consistently?
Yeah, I think setting the edge is a big issue. I know we focus a lot on inside and what, you know, Hankins and those guys were doing, but, you know, Golston, I mean, when I saw, and I was working on the draft with Golston coming out of Iowa, I thought he was a Tank Lawrence-type player when he was able with the pass rush and then the ability to play the run. There were times in those Big Ten games you couldn't see the ball go outside of him. I feel sorry for the guy. They play him at tackle. They play him at end. They play him at tackle then. It reminds me of Tyron Crawford. They can't find a spot for the guy, and all of a sudden now he's gone by the wayside, and you maybe wasted a little bit of a guy there. But I think when you start to talk about the edge, you know, they miss the guys like with the Leighton Van Der Eschers and the Sean Lees, the guys that can run downhill, the guys that can fill, the safeties that can fill. They kind of figured out a little bit with Diggs, you know, that you could run the ball on the outside there with Diggs, and if would Diggs come up and play you and force the corner. You know, you need alley players, you need force players, you need edge players. They were a little bit weak in all those areas.
Bobby, one area that you fought for is safety. Do you think some of this can be remedied by...
What's that Washington State kid?
Yeah, Hicks, Jaden Hicks, absolutely. I mean, heat-seeking missile out there. Do you think some of this could be remedied more so since you're not into tackle when it comes to the second and third level, taking a linebacker, taking a safety?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess it comes down to when you see the Cowboys struggle in run defense, why? Like when you look at it, what is the issue? Like in years past, their issue was, you know, during the Chris Richard era, they were always coached like how fast they needed to play. And a lot of times they got caught in over pursuit. They would leave these massive angles where guys could cut back. That was a problem that they ran into at different times. Is this a talent problem? Is it a problem with, you know, guys in terms of their ability to read and react? Is it like, you know, a size issue? Like there are these different things that you have to assess. I don't think that when you look at how the Cowboys have addressed defensive tackle in recent years, Jonathan Hankins, Neville Gallimore, Quentin Bohanna, like just different guys like this, that size hasn't always been the problem. Like I mean, it's there are other problems with run fits and reads and keys and everything else like that. So to me, I look at it and say, you need to get better, obviously, along the defensive line, linebackers, safeties. Like that's all stuff that has to happen. To me, they are, before they worry about depth or anything else, they have to figure out who is starting. So I'd love a safety that can, you know, like Jaden Hicks, who can do what he does. I love Adrian Cooper. I'd love to have him in here. Love to have a defensive tackle like McKinley Jackson, if you have the capital to spend on that.
Sweat.
Yeah, and to sure. Me, though, it's the reason why
I'll look the other way if he's just 360 pounds not getting blocked in there.
Staring at you in the fourth round.
I'll look the other way. Just keep playing in there.
Steven Jones said, you know, this week, or maybe last week, I can't remember, but Steven Jones said that they are going to play Mozzie Smith more like what he was used to doing at Michigan.
Yeah.
And so that right there, if you're going to project that out, you've already made the analysis of what type of a player he can be. You've got coaches that you believe in and you want to have, you know, bring that out of him. And so to me, I think that if you're going to set him somewhere where he's more comfortable and he gets year two and the conditioning is better and everything else, I think that that's something that you have to be able to bank on. Like of all the things they can't bank on, like I don't know why it would be a prioritization to say, well, I can't bank on my first rounder, but I can bank on the undrafted free agent center.
No, you have to. You have to bank on Mozzie.
And to me, I recognize fixing the run defense in a lot of ways will have to come from fixing depth at all three levels. To me, the most immediate need to fix your run defense in terms of talent that you've assessed, you need a linebacker. Is there a linebacker that I would take in the first round? No. And so to me, it's the defensive side of the ball is not even really a question for me in the first round.
Kyle, anything to add to that? Or?
I think he said it perfectly, because you hear about this all the time whenever it comes to building your offensive line. You build it from the inside out. You build it from center, and you go out to tackle, and you work that way from a roster-building standpoint. Nate Newton says that all the time whenever we're talking about adding some roster stuff. On the opposite side, you build from the front to the back. You build from your defensive line. You win in the trenches. Then you add to the second level, and you go to the backside. I don't think the Cowboys are horrific at safety. Now, is there room to improve? Absolutely. You can improve anywhere on that defense, especially against the run like this gentleman was talking about a moment ago. Mm-hmm. If you're able to give some help to those linebackers at the second level, that's when I start building confidence in stopping the run. So I think a big defensive tackle can help. I think banking on Mazi and seeing him go back to what he did best at Michigan, which was stop the run, clog up the middle, and not try this pass rush stuff that obviously didn't work as a rookie. I think Bobby's on to something here of building your team from the forward part to the secondary and making it work from there.
Strong up the middle.
Let me ask really quick. If Mazi Smith is not ready for the start of the season, or he gets hurt at some point in the season, who's your one tech?
Carl Davis.
Yeah.
Practice squad for most of the year last year.
I mean, we've moved Chauncey back and forth 100 times. We could just throw him inside and see what happens.
I would hope not. That was a joke.
Let's not
Please
do that.
Put him back at his home.
Edge rusher.
Edge. I wanted to add really quickly. Is that
no, yeah, yeah,
yeah. I wanted to add about, you know, being able to set the edge. I do think it's going to be important for them to find an edge that is opposite of Tank, that's disciplined. Because we've just seen teams attack you there and have a lot of success there. And a lot of the time when teams were running the ball on the Cowboys, it was bouncing to the outside. It wasn't just running up the interior. And with how teams are trying to attack those angles, it's going to become more of an issue. I've even talked about this draft is and the DN position as a whole is like, it's really this or that with a lot of these guys. If you find an edge in the draft that's willing to rush the passer, but also can stop the run at a high clip and really stay square and do it, then it's a luxury at this point. So edge is a need as well, a serious one that we probably should talk about a
no
little
doubt.
Bit more. Chop Robinson.
Oh, Chop Robinson, Brian. The get off.
Right. He does not want to edge.
Chop Robinson lacks finish. Chop Robinson will blow up the play, and then he will not make the tackle, or he will not finish the sack. But goodness gracious, the way he gets off the snap is insane.
I think I'm done limiting Penn State linebackers or edge rushers coming out of college.
At this point.
I think I'm done waiting on that one.
Yeah, no, you know,
y'all
Michigan
gotta
defense
let this
lineman?
Michigan thing go.
All right, we got a line developing here. I like
you
this. Where are we going, Mr. Maverick?
Talk about it.
All right, guys. What's up, Zach Waldo?
Oh, what's up, bro?
What's up, man?
Oh, I'm glad you came.
I appreciate it, man. I'm bringing up a topic. We talked a lot about it in private. You know, I hate limiting Jordan Morgan to the interior. I was like, I've seen this guy whoop people that these other tackles haven't been able to whoop. I was like, I've seen Tyler Guyton not be able to finish in the run game consistently, not playing with leverage, even though I know he's a big dude.
Sure.
I was like, but, you know, I've been against really tall tackles for a variety of reasons. That's one of the big reasons. I was like, this guy's the perfect size for the position. If a guy knows how to play with his hands, play with leverage, play with knee bend, has the foot quickness, this guy could play tackle. But I go back to, this team's done a lot of work with Jordan Morgan. We talked about, I remember I brought it up to you in January.
Sure.
They asked him, like, who's the team that you talked to the most throughout the bar? Says he named four teams, Arizona. I remember Arizona being one of them. But the Cowboys were one of them. He's like, they talked to me. We've talked a lot throughout the bar. This was January. We go to the combine. Nick, you had asked him about the Cowboys, and he brought up the versatility of left tackle and right tackle, not necessarily guard. So I was like, we keep trying to limit him to the guard. And then they went to his pro day. Him, Baltimore, and the Jets spent a lot of time with them before all the workouts. They had to stop the workout just because how much time they were spending with them pre all the other positional drills. That's just like, for me, it was like, I'm just banging, this is me banging the table for my
sure.
guy.
Stand on the table, Waldo.
Banging
Let him
my
know.
Table for this, like, this guy can come in. He's going to be a lot better than a lot of the guys that are going to be drafted ahead of him. And I just have a sick feeling we're going to pass on him. And he's going to end up in Washington, who's doing their own homework on him.
Or San Francisco.
And we're going to watch him be a stud over there. That's my only thought there.
No, I appreciate it. Waldo, Brian, did he sell you any more on Jordan Morgan? I know you were a fan of him early on as well.
I appreciate it. And by the way, I got lunch for you for that speech you just made right there.
Waldo puts in the work, man.
I do. I owe you for that one. No, I think Aisha was right. We talked about this when the draft show was rolling very early. This was a guy that Jordan Morgan was, you know, a guy that we watched very early. And I think you're right. There's a lot of qualities about, but there's probably some things that, you know, with Mike Solari, the line coach, it's different with every line coach. You know, he has a certain type of way that he wants to play. Hands, feet, length, all these things are things that these offensive line coaches, they go around, they kind of get their guys. And, you know, Jordan Morgan might not fit exactly what they're looking for right now. Once they get them all together, I think he's a hell of a player. And I think you made a great passionate speech. If we were in a war room, I would say you did your job today. You really did.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jordan Morgan is in play in a trade back scenario, and that would be a Tyler Smith at tackle, Morgan at guard, and then you still got to figure out center. But, I mean, Nick, you were boots on the ground there at the combine. Did you get a vibe from Jordan Morgan, a little twinkle in his eye when the Cowboys came up?
Yeah, I think it's like most teams. It's kind of tough to tell at the combine because they're doing 32 job interviews, and some guys can't even decipher one from the other. But I think with Jordan Morgan, not only did they do homework on him at the combine, they did it at the Senior Bowl. So they understand this guy. They understand what he can bring to the table. I think it's an expectation of you know what you're getting whenever he arrives in the building. And that is different than if you get an Amarius Mims or if you get a Tyler Guyton. You don't quite know exactly what you're getting from those guys. But also, on the same token, you ask yourself, okay, what does this player look like in 4 years from now when I'm thinking about this fifth-year option? Is a Tyler Guyton or an Amarius Mims going to develop at a trajectory that puts them way above Jordan Morgan by that time? You also have to be able to be comfortable in not only your scouting but your development in that same sense.
I think Jordan Morgan's a good player. I think he can absolutely play tackle. But I think the idea of saying that if teams were to say he's primarily a guard, I don't think, especially in today's NFL, where so much of it is get the ball out quickly and A-gap pressure is such a big deal, I don't know that talking about somebody as if they're guard, that teams would think of that as limiting.
Yeah, I don't think it's a negative anymore.
I think that teams view that as that's a valuable part of the offensive line, and it's part of an entire unit that they're trying to build. I also think that it's important to, when we hear the discussions that the Cowboys have, when it's like, hey, they talk to him here, they talk to him here, they talk to him here. Yes, a lot of times that can indicate they really like him. Also, at other times, it can indicate we have to figure him out because we're not comfortable with things.
Sure.
And so I think that whenever you see that, it can mean one or the other. It doesn't have to mean that they're not comfortable with things. It doesn't have to mean that they're in love with them. But I think that when you see a lot of attention paid to a player, a lot of different meetings, I think a lot of times they're saying to themselves, we need to get answers here that maybe we're not comfortable with yet.
And I mean, you can even look whenever we put together this Dallas Cowboys draft guide,
which is beautiful, and you should all get it.
We tend to put guys on the front that we have a feeling that could be the pick or just has name value. He's on the front because he fits the mold. He's on the front of the magazine because he has an opportunity to go to the next level and have some success. And that was about a month and a half prior to where we sit now, a week ahead from the draft. So there's been thought about Jordan Morgan, and if they do pass on him, to Bobby's point, it's because they have a reason. They have something that popped up through the process, or they just have another prospect that they had higher on their board and they didn't window dress it. He could fit you a need the same way that Graham Barton could, the same way that a J.C. Latham could, or some of these other guys. It fills a need, but it depends on where the value is with the players around him and who's on the board at that time.
No question. Aisha, do you want to vouch for your guy Jordan Morgan? Or do you kind of agree with where we're going here?
You guys have said
nailed
enough.
It.
He don't care about none of nothing you talk about, Kyle.
I love it.
He's gonna feel away.
Yo, bleep yourself.
That's good. Team trade back as well. I would assume.
Jordan
Let's go.
Stand up for
you. I know you do.
Stand up.
All right. Oh my gosh. All right, Ron, you need to keep this kosher, bro. I need to make sure no F-bombs here. There are children at home.
I was gonna say Broadus is probably worried about what's about to come out of my mouth.
We all are.
But I have a filter.
Okay. He's got a notes app. This is impressive.
Do you think this year's draft could be more about next year's draft after McCarthy and maybe Dak are both gone?
Oh, God.
I mean, it's real talk. What if Jerry goes with Deion and his son next year? Or if you can draft up and take Penix Jr. this year, what do you do? And remember, if you're not hanging out with Jordy or Ron drinking Jim Beam on 105.3 The Fan, where you at?
It's our guy. We love you, Ron. Thank you so much. Yes, round of applause for Ron. He nails it every Friday at 5:20. What you drinking? What you thinking? Aisha, how do we feel about Ron's question? I mean, you immediately went and buried your head behind your handy-dandy notebook.
Controversial. No, I don't have a lot to say about.
I will say. I'll say this. Though.
What was said just
I'll,
now.
I'll speak up. I'll speak up here.
Go ahead, Brian. Do it.
No fear, Brian.
This is unusual in a lot of different ways for scouts and for coaches, because you do have coaches that are on one-year deals, and you have a head coach that's on a one-year deal, or he's. So now you're in a situation where you're wondering as a player personnel department, we got to put this board together for who we think the best players are. Whether, you know, the coaches have input. I worked here for a long time. Coaches always had input here, always. Maybe at times too much, you know. I never called a third down defense, you know, but they would come into my area and tell me why this guy could play or this guy couldn't play. So I think they're in a very, very unusual situation. I think Will, Jerry, Steven have to manage this in a way that their board is put together, the truest board that they could put together for how this team is going to be this season and into the future. Yes, you could think about, you know, you could ask the coaches, hey, how would you like us to draft this board? You know, if you have a little bit of more stability to that, if you've had some continuity, they had a lot of continuity with Jason Garrett for 10 years. Scouts knew exactly what they were doing when they were looking for players for that staff. So to me, it is a little bit of a tightrope that you walk, but you also have to say, you know, and I know, again, Mike Zimmer, my relationship with Mike. Mike is a, hey, I like this kind of a player, but bring me whoever you want to bring me. And I think that's the attitude that you have to have going into this as a personnel department. You got to put the board together the best you can and play it in a way that is best for today and then for tomorrow, regardless of who's coaching this football team.
I think some thought to what you were asking there, Ron, and Bobby, I wonder your thoughts on this with the fact that, yes, it is kind of, hey, you don't have a lot of future right now locked up with your staff. When we talk about trading up.
Or your players.
We talk about moving picks for next year. Are you more open to do that? Because I might not be here next year. What do I care about those picks for?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that
the front office ain't going anywhere.
The front office isn't, but the coach, but Mike McCarthy might be like, hey,
no, but see,
I want this guy.
No.
Don't sell me on next year's draft. You know, I don't know that I got a job.
If I was Mike McCarthy, I would have been in Will McClay's office every single day going, what are we doing in free agency? Why can we go get, what are we doing? Explain to me what's going on here. You know, Mike McCarthy took the approach, I believe, of, okay, I trust you guys. Mike McCarthy, you got to remember, I came from the same program he did in Green Bay. Mike McCarthy did not, he just, by way of it, head coach, coaches didn't have a whole lot of say. The players were drafted by the front office. The coaches did a hell of a job of coaching. You know, there was some interaction, stuff like that. Mike is getting the first opportunity. I mean, this is what, his fifth draft now? Fourth draft that we've had here with him? This is the first real opportunity that he's ever had of going in and Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones looking at him and going, what do you think here? And then he have an opinion because in Green Bay, Ted Thompson would draft the players. So, you know, that's really different for him. But to me, I still think that they're going to have a say, but you have to be mindful of that. You know, you have to be mindful. Is this guy the best player for what we're trying to do right now? You know, and that's how you have to approach it.
I think the defensive coach might – I think Zimmer's going to have some input, but – maybe not as much as Dan Quinn.
Dan Quinn had a ton of them.
Because
lots of it.
There were plenty of times we would just be like, oh, that's a Dan Quinn guy.
Sure.
Definitely a Dan Quinn guy. Baby, that is too. So I wonder if that comes into play as well with Mike McCarthy having a little bit more say with that gentleman out of the building now and over
with
them people.
I disagree. I think Dan Quinn and Mike Zimmer and the way the Cowboys have generally built their personnel staff and the way that their personnel staff interacts with their coaching staff and the way that they gather information and, you know, have open lines of communication, say, what do you like? You know, what are the kind of things that you look for in players? All right, now we know what you like. We're going to go find it for you now. We're going to make the evaluation, but you tell me what you like. I'm going to go out there and find it. And in terms of looking ahead to next year, the Cowboys have had uncertainty with their coaching staff just about every single year. It's just with different reasons. You got to remember, they spent three straight drafts with Dan Quinn thinking this could be Dan Quinn's last year here. This could be Adam Gurdy's last year here. This could be Joe Witt, Al Harris, whoever else. Like, these could all be their last year here, and yet they still routinely go back and go, okay, Dan Quinn, you might be gone next year, but you really like Eric Scott, and Eric Scott really fits a lot of what you want. Let's go get him. You know, they had a decent sense that they thought, you know, Rod Marinelli, 2019, this might be the end for you. And yet they still, you like Tristan Hill? That's the type of player you like? So routinely, they have shown a history of, we are focused on what we know right now. We cannot, you know, it's control what you can control, which is a, you know, mantra that's talked about in NFL rooms everywhere outside of Dallas. Like Dallas and everywhere else talks about that. And what they can control is their lines of information, their lines of communication with their coaching staff and that coaching staff that they have now. They can't project out and say, well, let me guess who is the next defensive coordinator and what they're going to think or whatever else. And so I think Zimmer, even here, you know, just year one and everything else, I think 100% equally will have the same voice that Quinn does.
See, and I'm right there with you, because whenever you look at the way that this contract is, 1 year deal left, it's easy to look at it and say, Mike McCarthy's going to be here down the road or he's not going to be here down the road, depending on what happens in 2024. It's a year-to-year league anyways. That's the NFL. We've seen coaches fired after 16 games. We've seen coaches fired after 16 years. I mean, look at Bill Belichick, no longer sure. The coach with the New England
Patriots. Yeah, because he couldn't draft at the end.
Which is fair, but that's part of it. He's one of the greatest coaches of all time.
No, Tom Landry had the same problem here.
He's won six Super Bowls. Yeah. It's a year-to-year league in the NFL. If you are is a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately, and that's the thing is, if they go into it, I think the only time that this possibly plays a factor is if it's one player versus the other. Who's going to play more now as opposed to down the road? I think it might come into those conversations, but whenever it comes to building the board and putting these names on top of another, I don't think a lot changes depending on the coaching staff.
I'll tell you what, if they draft anything other than offensive line with that first pick, they are drafting for the future. They are not drafting for this season.
That's not happening.
Spicy from Nick Harris. I'm with you, though. I mean, I like what you're saying there, Bobby, and I do think that might be one of the things the Cowboys do best with Will McClain as scouts, going to position coaches, going to the coordinators and saying, hey, give me a description. What are you looking for? What do you like? And they come back, and they're able to build their board that way.
With just real quick, I'm sorry, I'll get...
Yeah.
You brought up about Michael Penix. Nobody benefited more from a falling quarterback in the first round than Mike McCarthy.
Oh, with Aaron Rodgers?
With Aaron Rodgers. Nobody benefited more. Now, well, I'm not saying...
And that system in Green Bay, that's drafted quarterback
every year. I'm saying Teddy Thompson had no intention of taking a quarterback when he took Aaron Rodgers. He was taking a defensive lineman. And that just shows you. Sometimes it's like, you know, you step up and you say, we can't pass on this guy. There's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of balls in the air in this organization about your quarterback.
If Michael Penix Jr. is there at 24,
please don't do this.
Show of hands. Who's considering drafting him?
Can you hold him high?
You already took your
ransom?
Quarterback in this draft with Trey Lance.
Did you?
Fourth round pick.
Because Penix,
you have to be able to justify spending special, 2 picks on a quarterback.
He's got that special about him now. And I'm not saying that Dak Prescott. Maybe he is the quarterback of the future here, and they're sold on him. And all right, that's fine. So I don't think that they'd really consider that, because I do think that's how they feel.
If they had not traded for Trey Lance, I would go with you on this one.
I'm with you.
And I like Trey. I'm willing to see what you have with Trey.
They had a second round, a high second round grade on Trey Lance. That's on their board. There's probably 20. I have 22 names. He maybe is player 23.
Who's better for you between Penix or Lance?
I had Lance higher.
You had Lance higher.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely not considering that then.
Well, no, I'm not. But, I mean, like, to me, but if you're looking at the situation and your quarterback's not signed, I think you absolutely have to look at a quarterback.
Yeah, I think you've got to have that conversation.
Yeah.
You guys
want to know something? I literally just looked this up. I was curious. Trey Lance is one day younger than Michael Penix Jr.
I believe it.
You're going to jail.
Yeah.
You didn't have to tell us.
Trey Lance was born
an older quarterback.
Trey Lance was born on May 9th, 2000, and Michael Penix Jr. was May 8th of 2000.
Yeah. And Bobby, you don't have to raise your hand. I know how you feel about that. But that's a trade back scenario if Penix is there. I think that might be a great scenario for the Cowboys.
I don't think it's a scenario at all. Sorry.
No, to trade back for another team wanting to move up, get a
oh yeah. Oh, I thought you said trade back to draft Michael Penix.
I think it's great if the Cowboys.
Oh yeah, that'd be awesome.
Penix is on the board.
Absolutely, that'd be great.
Maybe you get a call from a team.
Yeah, and I would say, just to Brian's point, talking about the Aaron Rodgers fault, which didn't – Rodgers went 24, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the same spot. The comp to that for me would be Drake May falls to 24. You're talking about a guy who, like Rodgers, Smith, they were, like, right there as number one pick. Penix is already a guy who you're talking about might be in that range is where he's supposed to go. And, you know, he's very impressive. I love him. He's my third-ranked quarterback. There's still the question that you have to ask about his medicals as well. Because, I mean, the guy has had a lot of knee issues throughout his career.
Yeah, he has. What do we got next up?
What's up?
What's up?
What's up?
Jacob from Keller.
What's up, Jacob?
Okay, so Cooper, the best Iowa prospect draft since Caitlin Clark, or like Newton.
Well done.
Thank you, thank you. Or Newton is on the board, and that gets Washington to call. Or Thomas is there, the wide receiver, and that gets Carolina to call. I think that's a team that we haven't talked about yet to draft up.
Okay, sure.
I don't know. I wouldn't trust Deontay Johnson to leave my wide receiver room and Adam Thielen. I don't know. So they're there. Would you take the defensive tackle, take an offensive lineman, or would you try and trade back with one of those teams that's calling you?
Depends on what offensive linemen are on the board, but let's assume Barton and Fatanu, they're off the board. I'm engaging in that call for sure. I think, especially with the receiver conversation.
That's Carolina and Washington you did?
Yeah. Okay. I think especially with the receiver conversation, there's a lot of receiver needy teams from about 28 to 38, and you can get a team to overpay. I think you can get a team to overpay and jump up to 24 to go ahead and grab a Brian Thomas Jr. or an Xavier Worthy or something to that sense.
Any of those players that you would if Barton's not there, I'm certainly open to moving back. I like Newton. I don't think we've talked a lot about Newton. I think Newton you probably don't take, considering to your point with Mozzie. But Aisha, tell us a little bit about Newton from Illinois.
Oh, man, that's what I was about to say, though, is, like, the reason why he's not getting no love like that is because Byron Murphy is just taking all of it consistently. But if you look at just how disruptive he is off the line of scrimmage, I noticed him last year when we were looking at the draft. Who was the guy that got picked up from Illinois last year?
Sidney Brown?
Yeah. They had quite a few guys.
I
noticed him last year, and he just flies off. He just flies upfield, strong, heavy hands. The thing about it is, like, we've talked about it on the show, is like, yeah, but he's a three tech technically, you know, mm-hmm. or he's one of those guys. And the nose tackle position is something that is, I don't know, it's just hard to come across. So it's like, I wouldn't take him just because he's a three tech like we talked about. I have seen Byron Murphy do some one tech things. I haven't seen Newton have to do that as much. So that would make me a little bit more hesitant. But him as a pass rusher he's going to cause some problems from
this guy's a load to deal with.
Yeah, he's a problem.
He is a problem because you see him split double teams.
Yeah.
You know, you see a guy play with power.
For his size, yeah. his movement
he's
skills.
He's a little bit of a shorter guy, yeah. but he's explosive. And they try and double team him, and the next thing you know, it's a tackle for the loss. We really haven't given him the due that he deserves. I think there is some versatility to this guy, you know, because, they try and get him in the running game. He's able to beat blocks at the point of attack. When he's pass rush stuff, he's able to get up the field. He could be disruptive in the pocket. So, yeah, Johnny Newton, Illinois, that's a guy, someone we're going to be talking about it on one of the nights or one of the afternoons in the draft. And, like, he gets picked, and we're going to go, that's a damn
whoever
good player.
Takes him, that's a good pick.
I think he and Murphy are closer than what people
yeah,
are
I agree.
Talking
I,
about.
Yeah. I don't think you're wrong. I think some people might have Newton ahead.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Sean, former UNT Eagle.
Oh, there we go, Cal.
Moved from Benton last year down to South Texas this year. Drove up from Port Lavaca to see you guys.
Oh, hey,
let's
thank
go.
So much. Thank
you. Port Lavaca, Calhoun?
Sand crab.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there we go. There we go.
What's the mascot? Show off.
Sand crab.
Okay.
The first round tackle conversation y'all had earlier with Mims, Gotten, and Sumatia. What is the conversation in the room with these guys if they don't feel comfortable out of camp, if Mims or Gotten can start week one? Sumatia has guard flex, being 6'5 as opposed to 6'8 for the other two guys who may lack some leverage on the inside. You could let the winner take all at left tackle and the other guy kicks into left guard.
Bobby?
Yeah, I think that if they were to take one of those guys, they're doing it with the idea that we're going to be ready to go. We're going to have these guys ready to roll with us at the start of the season. So I don't think necessarily they'd be picking based on, well, what if they're not ready? Like, I don't think it would be with that in mind. And if they were to take Mims, Guyton, Suamatia, if they were to take one of those guys, I think that if they didn't end up playing right away, it would be because they had already determined when they picked them what they were going to do with their offensive line, and that they determined it would be Tyler Smith, TJ Bass, Brock Hoffman, and that was the plan that they were going to have. You got to remember, there was a lot of discussion in training camp before Tyron Smith got hurt. There was a lot of people wondering, Tyler Smith is still not getting first team reps as a rookie. He was not. He wasn't getting the reps at guard.
Yeah.
Tyron Smith was getting a tackle. It was only after Tyron Smith got hurt that they went ahead and put Tyler Smith in there regularly. So they had drafted Tyler Smith seemingly comfortable with the idea that he may not even start this year. So I think that if they were to make that decision of you're not starting right away, I don't know that they necessarily think about it from the angle of, well, what can we get out of him right now? What can we do right now? And so I think that either they're drafting somebody for what they can be in the future and looking ahead to their depth and potential holes into the future, or you know, they're drafting them with a specific idea in mind of you're playing right now and you're playing here. And yeah, look, Suamatia, I mean, I think the fact that he's shown he can play left and right, Zach Martin talked about this with Tyler Smith, that if you can flip sides, that's a much more difficult transition than bumping inside, because a lot of the footwork on the run blocking is exactly the same, so that doesn't really have anything that you got to change up. And so it kind of cuts in half what you have to learn. So, I mean, if they believe that Suamatia could do that, then I think they would.
Well, and it depends on what you have with Matt Wiletzko and Awesome Richards as well. These are two drafted players in the past that you have to see something out of if you want to see them at that point. Now, do you expect Awesome Richards and Matt Wiletzko to magically be healthy and magically be ready to start going into the year? No, absolutely not. And I think if you're drafting an offensive lineman in the first round, you expect him to be over those two guys. But who knows, if they come back and they're healthy and they're able to roll in the right direction, I think there's a way that you could see some back and forth initially.
Yeah, I think in Brian, I know we've talked about this on The Fan, because early on I was arguing with Gavin about this, where it's,
imagine that.
We were talking about, okay, if Tyron were here, right? Well, Tyron's not. He's a New York Jet. But when you're drafting in the first round, you're drafting a player that you hope is a five-year member of your team and that you get a second contract on.
Right.
You're not necessarily saying, yeah, I've got a massive need right here, so I need to pull the trigger on X player because he fills a need and can plug and play. No, you're drafting the best player that's going to be the best fit for your team over the course of those 5 years. And I do think that Suamatia would probably be a great option because of the position flexibility to that point. Even if a guy, it's frustrating to the fan base. You want to see your first round pick play immediately. If he's not ready, they're not going to put him out there, and they've got some other options, but it doesn't change the fact that most likely that guy's playing and giving you snaps, because we've seen how difficult it is to make it 17 games with a healthy offensive line throughout the entire season. You need that depth. So eventually that guy will be a starter. Hopefully he is day one. If he's not, he's going to give you playing time, and it doesn't mean that it's a bad first round pick.
Yeah, Chuma Edoga or a first round pick there. I think with a first round pick, you have to have the expectation that he's coming in to give snaps. You have to have that expectation. There's nothing else about it. And then that's why.
Gosh, you're so short sighted. I can't stand you sometimes.
That's why I have a little bit of pause when it comes to the Tyler Guidance or the Amarius Mims. But I
keep that to yourself next time. Aisha, what do you have?
You gonna blame me too? Cause I feel the same way. No, I don't think
that's
you have,
why I'm going.
Come on, join the bandwagon. Join the bandwagon.
Don't bleep yourself over here.
I don't think you have that luxury with where you are contractually with your quarterback and all this other stuff going on. And then also too, this team's aerial attack was its strength last year. And I just think that if you're talking about left tackle, I don't want to play around with that at all. And also too, I just think you need contributors right away with how last year's draft went. I think you need to count on those first three guys giving you something.
Do you, if they were to take Kingsley Suamatia, do you not think he plays?
Oh, I'm gonna be happy time. Okay. Yeah, I think he earns that spot.
But is it a disappointment if he's not ready to go day one?
Yes.
Okay, that's
especially since, hey, listen,
I would argue it's
I don't know about other humans, I don't know about other teams, but this team has people outside. Like, we talk about how much offensive line is just a continued developmental thing. They have a guy that comes around here often called Duke, and he gets a lot of these guys. He's a luxury,
the goat,
as opposed to some of these other offensive linemen. So he'll get the work he needs. You need stability there right away to me.
Real quickly, just to see how consistent. Would you categorize Mozzie Smith as a disappointment this past year?
Because he didn't play right away?
Correct.
That's not the reason he's not a disappointment. But his play on the field was disappointing.
But if you draft a guy in the first round, you draft an offensive lineman, you expect him to play initially.
And when he plays,
there's going to be a reason.
He plays well and gives me better tape than what Mozzie showed me.
But
it's not a disappointment because he didn't start week one. because you had a guy ready to rock in Jonathan Hankins. But were you not excited about the possibility of Mozzie Smith?
Absolutely.
Did you think Mozzie Smith was going to start because you had Jonathan Hankins?
I agree with you. I agree with you there, but that's when you factor in that offensive tackle is so much more valuable than defensive tackle.
100%.
Whereas when he needed to be called upon, whenever Jonathan Hankins went down, he wasn't ready to fill that role.
Right.
And whereas...
Now, if this scenario happened and he wasn't ready to fill that role, then I'd be upset.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the difference is last year you weren't necessarily drafting for need. This time you are a lot more so. And I think whenever you're drafting for that need at there at 24, ooh, you got to get an offensive lineman that can come in.
I know we got to get to this question. I think they did draft Mozzie for need. I think we heard
there was a need, obviously, but it's not as big of a need as you're looking at right now at 24. Because you look at all the free agents that have left this offseason.
Oh, yes.
Last offseason.
They have to nail the draft.
We were talking about either defensive tackle or offensive line at 24, right up until the end. Whereas this time around, we've been talking about offensive line since the season ended against Green Bay. It's like, well, you got to go get an offensive lineman at 24. And like Biotish and Tyron Smith weren't even out of the building yet.
I hear what you're saying. But to me, it doesn't matter what position you take. If he doesn't start day one, I don't think it means it's a bust of a pick. I just want him to be able to contribute at some point and eventually be a starter.
We're not talking about a bust of a pick here, though. We're talking about a disappointment.
Disappointing,
in year one.
Regardless. Yeah,
that's the difference. I haven't given up on Mozzie either.
Bust,
but it was a disappointing year one.
Yes. But I don't think it was because he didn't start week one for me.
Got it.
What I would say.
Question.
Eric from Fort Worth. I know that overthecap.com has us for 3 5th rounders, a 6th rounder for next year for the comp picks. One of those I know is Tyron Smith. Based on his playing incentives, can that move from a 5th to a 4th to a 3rd based on, you know, if he's hitting those game incentives? And then with that, because we have 4 comp picks for 2025, do y'all see us maybe using potential picks 2025 to hit positions of need, middle rounds, because we have so many holes?
You can actually trade those too, which is cool.
Yeah, it opens up a lot of options for you.
Yeah, it opens up a lot of options. The part about the guy at the play time turns into where he's a starter and all that stuff like that. Does that? I don't know how that works on that.
Well, I mean, it's hard to understand because it's not a public formula.
Glad you're
secret.
It's not a public formula. I mean, there are parameters that are issued in the CBA that you can read. You can see generally how they factor it in. But they don't give you specific formula of how they come up with it. That's why teams sometimes may be expecting, oh, we're going to get a 4th round comp for that guy, and then they find out it's a 5th. And so it's not anything that they would – that specifically wouldn't be – like that sort of a specific isn't something that would be public. I remember reading, though, right after that the assumption was based on history of the way you've seen other deals play out – that they don't hit the incentive. Like, it's got to be whatever the straight read of the contract is initially rather than potential incentives. But again, that's very murky, and there's not a lot of great understanding on that.
And they've done it before where they've moved picks. I mean, Eric Scott Jr. is a great example from this past year. They knew they were going to get a 5th or a 6th comp pick at some point in this upcoming draft, so they moved a pick along to go and get a guy, to go and get Eric Scott Jr. And that's possible. It goes back to the initial question that I think we had right at the beginning, where it's depending on the value. Next year's picks are not valued very high on the trade chart, per se. But if you can package a couple of them together, then maybe you're able to make some moves and go up and get somebody that you really think is not going to be there whenever your selection rolls around.
Awesome questions. I mean, we could talk draft all night long. This has been an absolute blast here for Draft 101. Shout out to Miller Lite as well for sponsoring this. Appreciate everybody who's watched on the Twitch and the YouTube on 105.3 The Fan. We love you. Thank you to everybody that came out here, whether you asked a question or you
didn't. Thank you, guys.
You're all fantastic.
DallasCowboys.com, too.
Big thank you to DallasCowboys.com. Shout out to Derek Eagleton, of course, Gavin Spittle as well, and of course, the Jones family letting us be in this beautiful facility. It's absolutely outstanding. Thank you to Aisha Morrison, Kyle Yeomans, Bobby Belt, of course, Nick Harris, Brian Broaddus. I'm Zach Wolchuk. We'll be back Monday with the next edition of The Draft Show. We'll be with you all week next week leading into it. We look forward to spending all 3 days of the draft with you. Thank you so much, and hugs and hand pounds, everybody. We love you.
This has been a production of DallasCowboys.com and the Dallas Cowboys Football Club.
How about this, Cowboys? Yeah!